I'm John Betts with Nick Bunker. The end of this story is a tragedy. The sneak attack by North Korea in late June of 1950, June 25th, 26th. However, building up to this, Harry Truman has a vision. He calls it the Fair Deal. It includes health care reform. It includes housing, all the things that are needed for a country that's returning to normal, but all the veterans out there, all the people who were in war industries, are now spending money. And there need to be consumer goods. And Harry Truman understands that. And he's still thinking of the future, always the future, not just thinking of Joseph Stalin. There's a moment where he goes on the road and is very happy again to be on the road with his wife, Bess, and Margaret, his daughter. And they wind up in Chicago, I believe, at the Blackstone Hotel. At this point, how does Truman think of the struggles that Atchison is having with McCarthy? And what does Truman make of McCarthy's ambition? Does he think that he's a tool of Taft? Does he think that he's a threat by himself?
Well, at first, when McCarthy began his campaign in late January, early February 1950, Truman had been trying to dismiss him. He didn't really take McCarthy very seriously. And he thought that probably McCarthy could simply be dealt with if there was a kind of a phalanx of Democratic senators who got up in Congress and refuted all his various allegations. So he didn't take McCarthy very seriously to begin with. But gradually, as the weeks went by, so it became clearer and clearer that McCarthy was really getting traction with the American people. Not only that, but of course, Truman's own popularity rankings were slipping very badly. His approval ratings had always kind of swung up and down pretty dramatically throughout his presidency, but they were heading very, very downward. Was very fast in the spring of 1950. He had the problem which we mentioned earlier, which is the coal strike, which had not ended, which had to some extent been blamed by voters on Harry Truman. There were differences about civil rights, where there were arguments going on in Congress about civil rights legislation, and Harry Truman's plans for civil rights legislation again were defeated. There were all kinds of things going wrong for him. There was also another issue, which was corruption in the cities. This was a big issue at the time. Now, the difficulty was that the Democratic Party was seen in the eyes of many as being a party that was too close to the corrupt political machines of big cities such as New York, Chicago, and so on. And there was a particular scandal going on in New York City where it had been revealed that the police department, the New York Police Department, were engaged were being paid off, particularly in Brooklyn, by gambling syndicates. Gambling syndicates linked to what we would now call the Mafia of the Cosa Nostra. And this issue had sort of blown up also in the early part of 1950. And all these things were going wrong for Harry Truman. His popularity rankings were sinking. And then, as you say, he went on a great national tour, a tour of the western part of the country in May 1950. And this was really an attempt by Truman, one of a number of attempts by Truman, to regain the initiative, to rebuild his momentum, and to try and put a line in the sand. He wanted to push aside all these issues, to do all the criticisms that were being made about the issues of corruption in the cities, the whole McCarthy affair. He wanted to relaunch the Democratic Party with a very kind of bold message of recommitting itself to the Fair Deal. So he went on a great big tour of the Pacific Northwest and Montana and so on. He went to open the Grand Coulee Dam in Washington State, which is something that he saw as a kind of great legacy issue, a legacy of Roosevelt's New Deal. And he ended up in Chicago in May 1950 with a view to having an enormous rally to be introduced by Adlai Stevenson, of course, who was an up-and-coming man within the Democratic Party, this great big rally where he would have relaunched the party. And, of course, it ended up going kind of horribly wrong.
A detail, Elizabeth Taylor and Ann Miller both attended that event.
That's right. Elizabeth Taylor at this stage was actually emerging as the Democratic Party's favorite pin-up in Hollywood. It had been Myrna Loy. Myrna Loy was Franklin Roosevelt's favorite film actress, and she was very prominent in Democratic circles, and it was thought at one stage, in fact, that she would run for Congress, running for the seat that Richard Nixon vacated when he went to run for the Senate. But Myrna Loy had been kind of supplanted by Elizabeth Taylor at this stage, and she did indeed turn up at the rally in Chicago. Not only that, but Ann Miller, who was the star of the film, one of the stars of the film, On the Town, who did a kind of a musical routine on stage before Harry Truman gave his big speech. And this was characteristic of the Democratic Party at the time, by the way. They did have strong Hollywood connections, very strong Hollywood connections. And also the Democratic at the time had a lot of money to spend. They had a lot more money by way of fundraising than the Republicans did. And they did tend to go for these big kind of extravagant events. The trouble is, extravagant events of this kind, the one like they did in Chicago, have a habit of backfiring on politicians. They can go very wrong.
McCarthy's witch hunting will grow over these next years, but at this point there is an effort in the Republican Party to stop it. Ike remains aloof. I'm following your reporting, Nick. But Margaret Chase Smith of Maine, she has the four horsemen, fear, ignorance, bigotry, and smear. She appeals on the floor of the Senate to stop this. Does Taft listen to her? Does anyone listen to her, Nick? We have a couple of minutes.
She was a wonderful character, Margaret Chase Smith. She was the only woman in the Senate, and there were very few women in Congress. She was the only woman in the Senate, and she used to call herself America's Senator for Women. And she came from a small place in Maine, Skowhegan, Maine, where there's today that you'll find the Margaret Chase Smith Memorial Library. And she became very unhappy with McCarthy's tactics. Now, she knew McCarthy quite well because she had sat on a committee with McCarthy in Congress the previous year in 1949. And she knew him well, but she became more and more unhappy with the kind of allegations he was making, because when she looks at the evidence, the documents he produced, she thought the evidence was all a bit flimsy, this evidence about 56 odd card-carrying communists in the State Department. And so she did indeed gave this famous speech, the Four Horsemen speech in Congress in early June 1950. She was very unhappy about the tone and the mood of American politics. She was very unhappy about the polarization and the animosity. She felt it was unproductive. But she was also very critical of the Truman White House. She believed that it wasn't just McCarthy who was at fault. It was also the Truman White House, because she felt they were confused. They didn't really have a proper policy. She felt they were bitter. They were vindictive. They didn't have anything positive to say. She's very unhappy about them, too. She was very unhappy about Lewis Johnson, the Secretary of Defense, because she didn't like the cuts he'd imposed within the armed forces. And she felt America's military readiness was deteriorating. And so she gave a speech attacking both the Democrats in the White House and also McCarthy, but it's come to be remembered chiefly for the attacks on McCarthy, because she was really the first person who had the courage to get up in the Senate from the Republican side and really try to call out McCarthy. And that was quite a brave thing to do, but unfortunately people didn't listen to her. In the weeks that followed, she gathered some support, actually including Richard Nixon, actually the young Richard Nixon, but gradually that support kind of faded. As it became clear that McCarthy really was kind of holding the center of the stage, and he was becoming more and more powerful within the Republican Party, and so her message kind of fell on slightly deaf ears.
And then North Korea attacks. In the shadow of fear, America and the world in 1950, Nick Bunker is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.